Happy Thanksgiving and welcome in to another edition of Golden Black Radio. I'm your host, Derek Schultz. It's bucket week, as you guys already know, for Purdue as the Boilers try to salvage something from a 2024 season that really has not quite ever gotten off the ground ever since that opening win over Indiana State. They'll head to Bloomington for what's going to be a frigid night tilt against the Hoosiers team looking to accumulate as many style points as possible to stay in the college football playoff at large field. We're going to talk about all of that with Tom Dienhart here in just a few minutes. Also, a quick update on Purdue hoops in San Diego. But first, Golden Black Radio is brought to you by our friends at Purdue Federal Credit Union, a proud partner of Purdue Athletics and the official credit card for Purdue fans. Boiler up. Sand Valley Resort. Celebrate all the wilderness provides this fall and winter at Sand Valley. Experience everything from Thanksgiving dinner to curling and ice hockey to ice fishing and snowshoeing, and even the restorative benefits of a guided cold plunge in the frozen lakes. Start planning your next winter getaway by visiting sandvalleypursuits.com. And our friends at the Purdue Institute for Cancer Research. The Purdue Institute for Cancer Research has a history of innovation and one goal for the future: defeat cancer. Purdue brings together world-class Boilermaker scientists from all across the university, conducting cutting-edge research that uncovers new ways to prevent, diagnose, and treat cancer. With your support, cancer research saves lives. Join the fight and donate to the Purdue Institute for Cancer Research today. Let's welcome on Tom Dienhart, who is hopefully nice and full from yesterday's holiday. How was Thanksgiving in the Dienhart household, Tom?
It was very good, Mr. Schultz. I cannot complain. Had some ham with the turkey. Some sweet potato pie.
Oh, yeah.
Some dressing, some gravy, pumpkin pie, of course, to cap it all off. So, yeah, I cannot complain, my friend.
So you're a dressing guy and not a stuffing guy? I'm always fascinated. Indiana seems to be fairly evenly split on this stuffing versus dressing thing.
You'll have to. I'm going to admit, someone brought this up the other day. I thought they were the same thing. Can you real quick, not to get off on a crazy tangent, what's the difference between dressing and stuffing?
Oh, I thought they were the same thing too. I just thought, yeah, my mom calls stuffing. She grew up in South Bend, okay. And her mom called it dressing. So that's what we called it in our house. But obviously, like stovetop or the stuff that you buy at the store, it's called stuffing.
Yeah. It's something I get once a year. So it's got a different texture and different taste. You can have oyster dressing. It's just kind of a fun food item to have on occasion.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm a big stuffing, dressing, whatever you want to call it, type fan. Heading into this game, Tom, Purdue in a bit of a precarious position here because Indiana obviously is going to be out for blood for two reasons. One, they're coming off a loss in Columbus that really got away from them in the second half. And two, they're going to need to win by as many points as possible just to not give anybody on that college football playoff committee a reason to slide them back any further. I guess maybe if you're looking from a Purdue angle, glass half full, all the pressure's on them. Am I right?
Oh, you're exactly right. And Purdue's going to wade into Bloomington as a heavy underdog, as we all know. Derek, I think it opened up as a 25.5 point line. I think it may be pushing toward 30.
But
you're right, heavy underdog, nothing to lose, right? Indiana, like you said, Derek, still a nice record, and I think most people agree they were solid against Ohio State. They look like they belong on that field for the most part, I think. But like you said, there's the conspiracy theorist out there. There's the college football playoff cognoscente who think IU's ticket may not be stamped. And like you said, maybe incumbent on them really sitting on Purdue here, really imposing their dominance on Purdue, because Clemson's a team a lot of people have their eye on. If they beat South Carolina, maybe they could inch into the field. You know, we could talk about the playoff for a half hour, but like you said, IU's mindful of that. They know what's going on. I think they know what they have to do, Derek. And can't Purdue not allow IU to impose its will on them? That's going to be interesting. And more importantly, from a Purdue perspective, Derek, can Purdue end this 10-game losing streak?
Yeah, because as you had in your notes, I believe 11 would be a record, right? They've never lost 11 in a row?
The great Alan Karpik did that research. 1906 to 1908, it occurred over 3 years. 0-5, then an 0-5 record, then they lost their opener in 1908. And it finally ended after 11 games. And I've tried to chronicle that a little bit in my notebook this week, have a little fun with it too. So you're right. That's way back. I mean, that's even before Alan Karpik was in high school, right?
Well, while we're on the history kick, you know, in recent history, so you know, this century, I guess really kind of starting with the Joe Tiller era, there have been a couple of blowouts that have been Purdue-centric, right? Where we haven't really seen a true – I know that some of the Daryl Hazel games were clearly one-sided, and Indiana, you know, was clearly the better team. But we haven't seen a true IU blowout in this series since the Bill Mallory – Fred Akers era in the late 80s, that really great 87-88 Indiana team, 52-7 at Ross-Ade Stadium. And this is not to discredit Indiana or their season, but, you know, kind of the unforgivable sin, I think, for Purdue football fans is to get blasted by IU, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, you lose to Notre Dame, they've been losing to Notre Dame for the better part of the last 50, 60 years, right? You lose and get blown out by Indiana. It just feels like it's the ultimate insult to injury to fans, even knowing that point spread and knowing the gap in between the two teams this season.
Yeah, not good for your life expectancy if you're the coach on either side of this rivalry and you can't beat your rival, right? And you're right. For the most part, it's been Purdue that's done the blowing out over the history of this rivalry. And yeah, I was at that game in 1988, right over here in Ross-Ade Stadium, about a quarter mile from where I'm sitting, 52-7, like you said. And that was probably the real halcyon days of IU football there in the late 80s, early 90s. Just some great teams, great players. Think of Trent Green, Vaughn Dunbar, Van Waiters,
Anthony Thompson.
And, yeah. Just some really good players. And that was a true blowout that day. Capped a miserable season for Purdue. So you're right. Maybe we'll see a repeat of that on Saturday. That's what the odds makers think. And then we talked about from the jump here, that's what Indiana wants to try to do. And, of course, the overarching storyline with Purdue football continues to be, you know, what direction the program is going to go after this year with its leadership. So it's against that backdrop that this game will be played from a Boilermaker perspective. So, again, Just a big. I know. I use the favor, but there also is a pretty big sense of urgency for Purdue. Yeah. Maybe not to win, Derek, but to at least show that they belong on the field with Indiana and not get blown out.
Sure, and at the end of the day, it's a rivalry game and all of that. So, you know, pride is always on the line. And if we're again, I know that I'm kind of reaching for positives here because we're talking about a one win team against a one loss team. But I use offense. Has really slowed down, right? They've been hampered the last six quarters. The second half against Michigan, they couldn't get things going. They had to hold on for dear life defensively and that to win that game. And then they really did nothing after that opening drive against Ohio State. They were pretty much put into a blender after that. I fully understand that those are two vastly superior teams to Purdue. But Tom, in your eyes, can they keep Curtis Work and company in check enough to at least, as you mentioned, kind of keep this game competitive and stay on the field with IU?
That'll be the key, right? And you're right about the Indiana offensive struggles, though those are two pretty good defenses there. I know Michigan's had their issues, but they got some good players. Of course, Ohio State's defense is elite. No shame in struggling against that unit, especially in the horseshoe. To your point, Derek Schultz, can Purdue's struggling defense do anything to mute or slow down or even abate this Indiana offense? That, yes, while it's had its struggles, boy, Purdue's defense has been among the worst, not just in the Big Ten, but in America. So we'll see. The one positive, Derek, the last time we saw this Purdue defense, it may have played its best 30 minutes of the season up in East Lansing, Michigan. They pitched a shutout in the second half. Yeah, I know Michigan State's offense has had its issues, but still, on the road, in a tough environment, the defense is pretty good. So at least they're coming into this game with some momentum on that side of the ball. Can they continue that momentum? Can they get after Curtis Rourke? That's going to be the real key, is trying to disrupt that terrific transfer quarterback that IU's got.
Yeah, and it's not saying much, I know, but I feel like overall this season, the defense has performed much closer to expectations than the offense has, for whatever that's worth, even though both sides of the ball, Purdue has not gotten the job done, as is, you know, shown by their 1-10 record. Tough week here off the field. Travion Galloway, we saw, already announced that he's heading into the portal. Ryan Walter's staff also lost two recruits in the span of about 24 hours via decommitments and flips. I know one kid chose Iowa State. I'm trying to think, was the other one Illinois? I'm trying to think of what the other one was. Yeah, the other one was Illinois. What do those – we know that this isn't the last of it, right, Tom? I mean, this is what's going to happen here in the coming days, especially after the season officially comes to a close. But what do those decisions in particular mean for the program?
Hopefully it's the last of the decommitments for Purdue, Derek. It's been – Yeah, it's been tough to witness here. Two decommitments on Thanksgiving Day within hours of each other, really. Grant Bierman was the one that really hurt, the linebacker from Lakota West High School in Westchester, Ohio. Flipped to Illinois. A great kid, and a kid pretty really wanted. You know, he had a real good relationship with Kevin Kane, the defensive coordinator, and just the uncertainty around the program, the coaching staff, the Bierman family felt they had to go another direction. Qual Qual was the big offensive tackle from Centerville, Ohio, who flipped to Iowa State. He was more of a project, a long-term player, but still, I think you would like to have gotten him in your program and see how you could maybe develop him. They're down to 10 commitments, Derek, for the 2025 class. And FYI, my friend, signing day is this Wednesday, December 4th. Will there be more attrition between now and Wednesday? We'll see. Purdue said they're going to have a signing day press conference on Wednesday in the afternoon. So we'll see what names they announce. And, Derek, we'll see who's running that press conference, too. And then you mentioned, lastly, Tavion Galloway, the freshman tight end, announced he's going to go in the portal, which opens December 9th. God bless him. We'll see where all that goes. I don't think the Purdue coaching staff is wringing its hands too much about that. But more to the point, Derek, I think it could be a steady flow of players for the portal for Purdue once that thing opens up. Galloway could just be the first or maybe many.
Yeah, and obviously there's some of that is expected even for successful programs, right? Where you know, that this is just the new reality in college football, but you worry about the floodgates truly opening here for Purdue with, as you mentioned, so much uncertainty, not only about Ryan Walters, but about the coordinators and about the staff. A lot of the guys that, you know, develop these early relationships with these players that lead to these commitments. We're talking with Tom Dienhart, talking Boilermaker football here on Golden Black Radio, Friday edition of the show. Thanks to our sponsors like East End Grill and Rippling Company, two distinctive bistros across the street from one another on the far end of Main Street, the perfect place for your next event. And the Whitaker Inn for unparalleled comfort and cuisine. Visit the Whitaker Inn. Health-wise, injury-wise, Tom, how the Boilers looking heading into this matchup with IU?
Not too bad for this being the last game of the year. I asked Coach Walters near the end of the press room Monday about the health, and they really don't get a full report until later on that afternoon. But he said Cole Brevard, the big nose tackle from Carmel, is trending in the right direction. Jamal Harkless, a backup nose tackle, who also missed the last game, he thought he was going to be ready to go as well. So they were pretty thin at that nose spot up in East Lansing, but they should be more fortified there. And then I guess C.J. Smith, the wide receiver, of course, missed last week's game, and he was going to find out more about C.J.'s status. Of course, we're not able to follow up with the coach between now and game time, but my guess would be I'll be surprised if he's out there. So, but really, by and large, it looked to be in pretty good shape heading into this finale.
Kind of 10,000-foot view here, Tom, and maybe we can talk about this more, obviously, when the season is officially over. But I know a lot has been made of the schedule, and look, five top 10 teams and four top five teams is absolutely ridiculous, right? I mean, it's borderline historic, the schedule that Purdue has faced this year. But none of those to this point have even been within the realm of being competitive. And Purdue obviously hasn't gotten over the hump in any of their winnable games either. You know, that Oregon State loss has not aged well. They had the two kind of coin flip games against Northwestern and Michigan State that did not go their way. And then the overtime loss in Champaign. I thought my bar was, while it was low, I thought it was pretty realistic for Purdue this season. You know, in August, I was hoping they'd scratch together 3 to 4 wins and find a way to stay in a few of the games against contenders. But they've really kind of fallen far below that. So, you know, with where entering the final game of the season, with where Purdue is compared to where you expected them to be, how far off the mark expectations wise are they from this 2024 slate?
3 to 4 wins, I think. I thought 4-8 was reasonable, just like last year, given the nature of the schedule, like you talked about. And I think Las Vegas had their over-under win total, I want to say at 4. Maybe it was 5, but it was 4 or 5 at the best. So there you go, 4-8, 5-7, right? Mm-hmm. Things break right. Maybe you get to 6-6. Maybe 7-5 if things really break right. So there you go. We're talking 1-10 right now. So even I can do that math, right? And Derek, you know, you talked about, you know, the toughness of that schedule, and it's hard to judge Purdue against the likes of Ohio State and Oregon, and you know, Penn State, the schools of that ilk, the elite of the elite, Notre Dame. These are college football playoff teams, right? Purdue's still a program very much in development. But the games you want to really measure them against are the ones you mentioned, the more peer programs, and they've even failed those tests. You mentioned the games Oregon State, Nebraska, the two overtime losses to Northwestern and Illinois, last week's game at Michigan State. So those really disappoint me the most. And if you want to chastise Purdue about their games or their games against the elite teams, was they couldn't even be competitive, which was disappointing. Yeah. There, we knew they weren't going to probably win, right? But at least show you belong on the field, look organized, play hard, compete. 45-0, 35-0, 66-7. We really didn't see that even against the elite teams on the schedule.
No, it was a tough going, and hopefully we don't see 5 of 5 break that way here with a top 10 Indiana team coming up tomorrow night. Tom, we appreciate the insight and analysis as always. You had the chance to catch up with Don Fisher earlier today, so we'll bring that conversation to our viewers and listeners here in just a second, and we'll bring you back to talk about the final week of the Big Ten slate as well. Thanks so much, pal.
You bet, buddy.
That's Tom Dienhart, and a tough season for Tom. You know, Tom's been covering college football for the better part of the last 4 decades, so he's been through some seasons, and even when he was doing the national stuff, you know, following some of the teams where things did not go their way, but obviously a chance for the wrong kind of history, as Tom wrote at goldenblack.com, for Purdue coming up Saturday with a 1-11 season and potentially an 11-game losing skid to end things after an opening win over Indiana State. I mentioned Fish, despite the weather, he's probably happy, actually, that he didn't make the trip to Bahamas with their basketball team, who looks to be failing to live up to expectations for like the 30th year in a row. But Don Fisher talked all about the Hoosiers and Boilermakers in this Old Oak and Bucket matchup with Tom Dienhart earlier this week. And here's this week's opponent view of IU.
Hey, really happy to have Don Fisher join us. Of course, Don, iconic voice of Indiana athletics. And Don's going to drop some IU knowledge on us as we head toward the Bucket game, 7 p.m. kickoff in Bloomington. Don, welcome. Thank you. Let's jump right in. Tell our viewers and listeners what they can expect from the Indiana offense on Saturday.
Well, hopefully a lot more than what we saw this past Saturday. Obviously, they didn't play very well against Ohio State. And one of the things that was concerning was the number of sacks that Curtis Rourke had to take in that contest against the Buckeyes. But that's the anomaly, because throughout this season, they have kept Curtis Rourke upright for almost every ball game and has had very few sacks throughout the season. So the offensive line obviously is going to have to stand up and be a lot better than they were against the Buckeyes. But let's face facts here. This is one of the best teams in the country that just beat IU for the first time this season. They have probably more talent than just about anybody else in the country too. So that was a factor, but I really think this offense will be much better on Saturday. Obviously, Purdue's had their problems this year dealing with the number of losses that they've had. But you know what? This is a Bucket game, and when the Bucket's on the line, teams play differently in both cases, I think, both in Indiana and Purdue's case. So this is going to be a challenge. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think Ryan Walters showed some emotion after their ball game against Michigan State last week, and that said his team hasn't quit on him. And he said those guys put their hard hats on every day and come to work and give us a great effort. And I think this Purdue ball club will be ready to play Indiana. So I think Indiana is going to have to play some of their best football, especially early on. If they can take the game out of Purdue's hands early, that'll be a big difference maker.
Okay, defensively, Don, what can we expect from Indiana?
Well, defense, I think, has been one of the unsung heroes of this season for this IU football program. Everybody's talked about the offense and the kind of numbers that they put up on the scoreboard on a consistent basis throughout the year, with the exception of the last couple of games now. And I do think that this defense is a really good defense. I think they really get after people. I think they're aggressive. They play fast, physical, relentless, as Coach Cignetti would tell you. And I think that's their motto. I think Brian Haynes does a great job of designing the defensive plays for this ball club. And I think the biggest thing about them is that they do get after people. They're a very aggressive defense. Kane Womack, when he was here back in 2020, had a similar defense. If you remember that particular season, obviously Indiana and Purdue didn't meet that particular season because of COVID, but that defense was so much fun to watch. And this one does the exact same thing. They're really aggressive. They're fast. They've got guys on both edges that are really good and require double teams most of the time. So I think this is, I think this defense will keep Purdue in check. I think they've got that kind of talent.
Okay, Don, two programs obviously headed in opposite directions, 10-1 IU, 1-10 Purdue. Indiana's probably playing for a college football playoff bid here. Purdue's just trying to get a win to end a 10-game losing streak. IU's a 25.5 point favorite. I don't recall Indiana ever being that big of a favorite against Purdue in the bucket game. How do you see this game unfolding?
Well, I think the key is getting off to a fast start for both teams. If Purdue gets off to a fast start and has Indiana on its heels at the beginning, it might be a test. I think it really, I think it's going to be keyed in that way. I think the fast start for whichever team, I think will probably dominate this football game. And I shouldn't say dominate in that sense, but I think the team that gets off to a fast start, if they can get a score early or two, from Purdue's perspective, no question that buoys that confidence level for them, and vice versa. And if Indiana gets off to a quick start, gets a couple of touchdowns early, I think that really helps Indiana as well. So I think the start of this ball game is going to be critical. I really do. I think it factors into the whole mindset of these two football teams.
Thank you, Don Fisher, voice of Indiana football. Look forward to seeing you Saturday down south. Thanks again for stopping by. We really appreciate it.
Not a problem, Tom. Thank you for having me. Have a happy.
That's the great Don Fisher, and we appreciate his insights on the Old Oak and Bucket rivalry being renewed between the Hoosiers and Boilermakers coming up tomorrow night for the first ever night game from Bloomington. And that should be a really, really chilly night. In fact, how chilly is it going to be? Let's ask our resident meteorologist, David Seipel of WLFI. He's got your game day forecast for IU and Purdue.
Hello from News 18. I'm Storm Team 18 meteorologist David Seipel. The Boilermakers are heading to Bloomington to take on the Hoosiers in the Old Oak and Bucket game with a kickoff time around 7 p.m. on Saturday. Prepare for a cold and blustery game in South Central Indiana. If you'll be heading down south to tailgate in the morning, temperatures will be in the upper teens for low temperatures. Wind chill values in the morning could be as low as 5 degrees at times. By noon, temperatures will only be around 25 degrees with a wind chill temperature around 15. High temperatures will occur around 4 p.m., which will only be around 28 degrees. By kickoff, temperatures will drop into the mid-20s with wind chills around 15 to 18 degrees with westerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Skies should remain partly sunny for the day. Overall, get ready for a cold and blustery evening for some Boilermaker football. From News 18, I'm Storm Team 18 meteorologist David Seipel. Boiler up, hammer down.
And we appreciate David's return to Golden Black Radio for our great weather report, and the WLFI crew the entire year long. Chad Evans as well included on that for providing our weather reports every single week here on the show. If you're looking to be provided with the best analysis and conversation around Purdue athletics, head over to goldenblack.com. Shows like this one, Knucklehead Central, Tom Dienhardt, Brian Newbert, Carm, Allen, you get the whole crew at goldenblack.com by becoming a subscriber today, so please do so if you're not already. Also want to give a shout-out to our friends at Purdue Federal Credit Union, a proud partner of Purdue Athletics and the official credit card for Purdue fans. Boiler up. Joining us now for a look back on history, hopefully not the wrong kind of history for Purdue coming up Saturday, is our pal Alan Karpik of goldenblack.com, the illustrator, of course, of the whole thing. And you know, Tom, look, I asked this to Brian on Tuesday's show, and I kind of wanted to get your take. There have been a couple of games in the last 30 years in this rivalry where Purdue essentially could pick their score. You remember the first few and the last few Tiller years were all blowouts. Jerry DiNardo's final game at Indiana, I remember. that was actually my senior year at IU when DiNardo and IU got run off the field. And then the most recently, the 2021 blowout at Ross-Ade, where, you know, Indiana had a season similar to this one, I think, that Purdue's having, where they were 2-10. I'm a little bit worried, and I know that some Boilermaker fans share this worry, that tomorrow night is one where maybe it's IU's turn at the wheel to be in the controls there. Yeah, I mean, it hasn't happened a lot in this history and of this, you know, the program, certainly. And you guys have outlined a little bit of that. You know, 1988, Tom mentioned that Purdue's only score that game in a 52-7 loss was a fake punt. Yeah, that's how bad it got. Wow. And it put them ahead. I think I put on the last 52 points of the game, as I recall. But, yeah, this has been a series that historically, certainly in Bloomington, most of the time the games have been competitive. And as you mentioned, too, Indiana being as big a favorite as that, that's never happened at 25.5 points and going more as we speak. So that's what's going to be interesting from that standpoint. Can Purdue make this a competitive game with so much that Indiana has on the line? And Purdue has a lot on the line, too, because the future of the program could be at stake. And that's another storyline that we'll be watching on Saturday night. And it may be the coldest game in Buckeye history. I can remember a couple of them. 1981, when there were snowballs, Jim Young's last game, snowballs being thrown down from the IU student section, and Purdue lost that one. And then I think you have to go back to before I was born, 1956, Purdue and Indiana in Ross State Stadium. I think it was 15 degrees in Len Dawson's last game. But there haven't been that many that's going to be as cold as it's going to be on Saturday night.
You had mentioned when we were talking off air, the 89 game, which I believe before this week was the highest point total in IU's favor, something like 15.5. And it ended up being a surprising 15-14 Purdue win. So it's not like the heavy underdog hasn't always won in this rivalry. Obviously, they've been playing for 100 plus years. So sometimes I guess strange things have happened. But what are the memories of the 1989 game, Alan?
Well, and that was an incredible, it would be almost as big an upset as that one. Purdue under Fred Akers was bad offensively that year and struggled defensively mightily. You know, somehow that game also on a cold day, not as cold as it's going to be Saturday night, but Purdue hung in there, made some plays at the right time. Eric Hunter, the Purdue quarterback, gets a touchdown pass with a couple minutes to go to put Purdue ahead. And then Indiana, Anthony Thompson, you know, who was good on his way to the Heisman Trophy. If he'd had a big day against Purdue, Purdue held him under 100 yards. They returned that kick after Purdue went ahead down to about the Purdue 30-yard line, as I recall. And then Indiana misses a chip shot field goal to win that game. Purdue, of course, celebrates and saves Fred Akers' job for a year. He was probably going to lose it after that game, and somehow, some way, Purdue came on to win. There was a couple games in the 20 under Daryl Hazel that Purdue fans want to forget, where Purdue might have been a big underdog, 20-point underdog, I think in 2013 and 2014, I want to say. But again, it's pretty historic where both programs are right now. And unfortunately for Purdue folks, it's not on the good side.
Yeah, it's something else rare that there has rarely been real national stakes.
No doubt.
For this game, right? There's been pride, there's been low-level bowl bursts, but national, I mean like Rose Bowl, or, you know, obviously now with the college football playoff, this being the first year of the expanded field, very much that is on the line for Indiana. What are some of the other ones that kind of come to mind? I think of 2000 and the Drew Brees team that needed that to clinch because they were in a three-way tiebreaker situation, if I remember right, atop the Big Ten standings. So the margin for error was zero. And then maybe if you go back to the Purdue Rose Bowl year or the IU Rose Bowl year, I want to say, whatever, 67, I think that was maybe one of the other games that there were real national stakes on the line.
That's really true. I mean, you look at 2000 and Purdue did have to win that game and ends up, I think, going in a winning the tiebreakers in a four-way tie for the Big Ten. But and Purdue had beaten Ohio State and Michigan that year and Northwestern, I think the other teams it tied with for the league that year. And my point is that and I think that was a great game because Jim Chaney, Purdue's offensive coordinator, all I remember about that one, well, you remember certainly the pictures of Drew Brees and Joe Tiller with the rose, Tom Campbell's iconic picture from a Purdue standpoint, but also the fact that Purdue was so dominant in that game. They ran the same play to Montrell Lowe, 27 plays in a row or some crazy number. Lowe had a big game, making 38 carries in that game, and Purdue beats Indiana pretty easily. Though Antoine Randall-El always made Purdue nervous, and he should have. I remember 99 game in Bloomington came down to really a punt return by Vinny Sutherland that got the Purdue done. But yes, 1967, of course, Indiana's unbelievable trip to the Rose Bowl and under with Harry Gonzo and Jade Butcher and John Eisenberger. And of course, Indiana beats Purdue because Purdue fumbles on the goal line
And Purdue was like a 2-touchdown favorite in that game, ranked second in the country down in Bloomington. Indiana wins that game, shares the Big Ten title, but because of the no repeat rule, the fact that Indiana gets to go to the Rose Bowl as a Big Ten champion, Purdue went for the first time, as you may recall, not as the Big Ten champion, but as the beneficiary of the no repeat rule because Michigan State couldn't go. So, yeah, a historic win for Indiana on that day, a 19-14 win that Hoosier fans, longtime Hoosier fans, will never forget.
We'll see what happens with Ryan Walters and his staff. Obviously, that's going to remain to be a storyline even after the season comes to close tomorrow night. But in some of these games, a coach's fate has been in the balance. In fact, you know, going back to 20 years ago, the rumor I always heard was that Indiana was actually leaning towards potentially keeping Jerry DiNardo for a fourth season. And then they got run off the field at Ross Aden and decided, okay, fine, let's go ahead and move on. But I know on both sides of the rivalry, that's been the case. In fact, Bill Lynch won his final game. They already knew that he was exiting at Indiana. But in Purdue's case, you know, I mentioned the 89 game against Akers. You thought that maybe that was a job-saving one until, of course, the next year, correct?
Right, that's right. And of course, Purdue fired Akers after a dismal performance against Indiana in 90. Maybe the die was cast at that point, but that was a home loss to Indiana and a turnover-laden loss. Indiana was pretty good at that time, too, obviously, as you outlined earlier. Yeah, Danny Hope in 2012, I don't think – and Purdue beat Indiana by – 56-35 in that game, did not save his job. So there've been cases on both sides of the ledger where there was a surprise of sorts, and that wasn't a surprise to Danny Hope. I think, unfortunately, Danny got blindsided a little bit on that, but the die was cast in that one, pretty much, at least from our perspective, that Purdue was going to move on from him. And that was certainly one. You mentioned Jerry DiNardo, and Purdue put 62 and 63 points on Joe Tiller's last game in 2008. But there have definitely been days when that bucket game for both schools cost it. I remember 96 also, Jim Coletto and Bill Mallory, both lame ducks at that point. Yeah. Both had been – Coletto had technically resigned and asked for his job back, didn't get it back, as the story goes. And, of course, Mallory was out, but they finished up that game. And Indiana wins that game at Ross-Ade Stadium, and also where Purdue had, I think, 4 or 5 interceptions and Indiana wins. So there's been we're outlining a lot of games with a lot of unremarkable things, but interesting. There have been some really interesting games and fun games, and this one is so important for Indiana. It's important for Purdue, too, obviously, for Ryan Walters, but it is really important for Indiana and the fact that the Hoosiers have their sights set in the college football playoff.
Given the history of both programs, kind of a fitting way to describe the rivalry, right? Unremarkable, mostly, but interesting, because it's always fun. I mean, even when both teams are struggling – it's always been a fun game where you don't really quite know what to expect. Alan, I wanted to fit in a basketball question as well. We're a little time sensitive here because, of course, Purdue's playing later tonight in the championship game out in San Diego against an Ole Miss team that survived in overtime against BYU. I don't know how much of a chance you got to watch yesterday because, you know, the holiday and everything, but I thought a very workmanlike performance against NC State where they just kind of kept them at arm's length. But I'm really, really bullish on how some of the young players are coming along here. Notably, Camden Heidi had a terrific game yesterday and continues to play very, very well.
Exactly. This is a team that's really fun to watch. And what do you mean? We watched the whole thing because how could you digest anything but that if you're a Purdue basketball observer? Sure. And the Boilermakers did take care of business. Purdue's an interesting team because you watch all these teams with all this athleticism during Feast Week and you look at it and you say, how can Purdue be in on the same court? When you watch Alabama again, watch Auburn. These are teams, and of course, Purdue's going to have to play Auburn in a bit at the end of or mid December. It's really interesting from that standpoint. But I think Purdue's in a good position, but Chris Beard has been a thorn in Purdue's side. Purdue fans don't need to be reminded of what his teams at Texas Tech, of course, in the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament, and then of course the Little Rock game back. Purdue's fans have wiped that from its memory, that meltdown at the end of that game. It'll be a competitive game tonight, and it is an important game as Purdue continues to work its way through this non-conference schedule, because you got to think, you know, it's next Thursday, right, when they go to Penn State. Penn State, a very capable team, it appears. And then Maryland, and then you got Texas A&M, then you got Auburn. So it's a murderer's row for Purdue down the as it heads into that January schedule. But I really like the way Purdue's team is playing, and it's the old adage. You look at Thursday's game with Braden Smith and Lawyer both going 2-for-8. It doesn't seem to matter. Those guys, Smith obviously has a great game. Lawyer does what he does. This is a team that seems to play very well within itself. And if they can get production out of guys like Camden Heidi, Miles Colvin, I don't think he's had a basket, he had one yesterday, but on Thursday and being able to do that and still not score and still contribute is a really, really good sign for Purdue moving forward.
Yeah, no layups here, to use the basketball term, right? For the rest of the month, no South Carolina Christian Tech State coming up to take a little bit of a breather. It's going to be all gas, no breaks here for Purdue moving forward. Alan, appreciate it as always. And let's bring Tom back on and we'll go around the rest of the Big Ten football-wise. And, Tom, we talked about this being kind of a rare situation where there are actual stakes on the line. For Indiana, at least, when it comes to the bucket game, but kind of a rare situation for the game, at least recently, being, Ohio State, Michigan, where there's not real national stakes on the line for both teams involved, right? I mean, I think this has been a top five matchup for the last, 3, 4, 5 years, it feels like. And here's Michigan that's just kind of fighting to stay above 500.
Yeah, this one has not the import that some of the recent vintage matchups in the game have had, and stakes obviously huge for Ohio State, right? Trying to punch their ticket to the college football playoff. I guess maybe they're in, but you just never know at this point, right? But more importantly, I mean, the playoff bid's huge for this program. They're all in, obviously, to win it all this year, but they want to be Michigan, right? They haven't beaten it for 3 years.
Yeah.
It's driving them crazy. Ryan Day probably hasn't slept a wink all week, even though he's going to be a pretty heavy favorite. You just never know, right? They don't want to get ambushed at home. So, yeah, all eyes are always going to be on that ball game. And, a couple teams are playing for bowl eligibility this week. The Wisconsin Badgers. And I'm going to call Luke Fickell an embattled coach.
Yeah.
That game's going to be over by the time this thing gets posted. But, yeah, Paul Bunyan's acts a big ball game up there in Madison. I think he's got to win to get to 6 games, just to kind of quell the fan base up there. I think that's important. And Michigan State has got Rutgers at home, chance to get a 6th win this year. I know that doesn't seem like much, but for Jonathan Smith and the Spartans, being nice to punch their ticket to the postseason as he tries to build that program up there in East Lansing. And guys, too, how about Notre Dame at USC? I know the Trojans have had their issues this year. That they're coming off a nice win. I talked about Luke Fickell being embattled. Well, Lincoln Riley's certainly embattled out there in Los Angeles. Knock off the mighty Irish out there in Southern California. Would that knock the Irish out of the college football playoff? I don't know. Just kind of food for thought, something to keep your eye on. Could really shake things up, I think, with that college football playoff standing here moving forward if that happens.
Yeah, if you're an Indiana or Alabama fan, you're pulling hard for USC, right? Yeah, to kind of keep that kick that door open for you if you're Bama, and keep that door open for you if you're IU.
Yeah, you're exactly right. IU fans, they're going to be really cheering hard, obviously, for the Trojans to dent that Notre Dame resume, if you will. So, yeah, just a fun time of year, guys. Alan's seen a lot of rivalries over the years. Just a fun week, rivalry week. Of course, we're always immersed in the bucket game, but they don't call it the Sweet Sue Tomahawk rivalry anymore, but the Northwestern Illinois game is always kind of a fun one, too. We talked about Paul Bunyan's axe. We've already seen some rivalries play out. And, of course, guys, outside the Big Ten circle, too, the Texas A&M.
Yeah.
That crazy rivalry. After
love that game.
Year. So, my gosh. You're going to be able to just drop a match in College Station. That place is going to set us up on fire. It's going to be so crazy down there. So, just a fun week. Georgia Tech. Could the Yellow Jackets knock off the Bulldogs? So, yeah, just a fun week.
One thing I was going to say, the Ohio State's worst nightmare, though, is if you have a nightmare, it's losing here. And not, of course, then you'd probably be spared having to play in the Big Ten championship game, I suppose, right? Because it would be Indiana and Oregon, assuming Indiana wins. But that's what's so crazy about this too, is the effect of these if there's an effect, and what the committee will do on these championship games. Because if Ohio State would lose to Michigan today, does that knock them out? Probably not, but it would be it might knock Ryan Day out for the rest of his life if you don't get that done. I don't see that happening, certainly, but it is an interesting scenario, and these championship game scenarios too. Indiana's probably sitting the catbird speed if they can beat Purdue as expected, and then they can sit out that game. It doesn't hurt them in a lot of ways for not having to play in the Big Ten championship. But it's a weird world out there, and I think there's still a lot of moving parts to the college football playoff.
You know, last week, Derek Schultz, IU got some big-time help
with
the SEC teams.
No doubt.
Ole Miss getting beat. That was a killer loss for Ole Miss. Of course, Alabama getting ambushed over Norman, Oklahoma. So, yeah, the IU fans are happy about that. You're right. So, again, I guess what I'm trying to say is, you guys, I'm not breaking news to you or anybody watching this, but, you know, it's college football. When you have so many games, you're going to have these upsets, and I guess that's why we watch, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, something else to think about is the jockeying for position. Like, I look at Notre Dame and Penn State. You know, that could be the difference between going on the road in the second round to face the SEC champion or going on the road in the second round to face SMU or Miami. You know, and you would ask Penn State or Notre Dame, they'd much rather be in the second position instead. One thing, Tom, that I'm hoping that they avoid, I saw a projection this week that had Tennessee playing Georgia and IU playing Penn State.
Yeah,
I don't want to see that. You know, I want Tennessee to be in State College in December. That's what I want. You know, I don't want to see conference games. So I'm hoping, I know the committee has no obligation to do that, right? They got to seed it as they seed it. But I really am hoping that we see some matchups that we wouldn't normally see with this 12-team field.
Yeah, I think we all do that. That's what makes it fun. I know for myself personally, it's just seeing those matchups we don't typically see. And then to see them at this time of the year at these venues, on the on-campus venues. I wish this whole thing was at on-campus venues. Of course, it goes to the bowls in the second week, which I still think is just absurd. I wish they'd just blow the bowls up and get rid of them forever. Everybody's salivating over these on-campus games. So why don't we have them all on campus? Yeah. Anyway, I digress, but you're right. They maybe they can't avoid conference matchups or matchups between conference teams in these playoff games. You hope they can, but we'll have to wait and see. I know, as they say, the cake is not fully baked yet, Derek Schultz.
Right.
Keep your head out of the oven and don't peek. And maybe this will all resolve itself by the time we get to early December.
You never know. That's for sure. I mean, that Oklahoma result was about as shocking as they come. The fact that, you know, the three touchdowns over Alabama was crazy. Guys, happy Thanksgiving once again. And thanks so much all year long. It's hard to believe this is our last football-centric show, right, that we're going to do here on Golden Black Radio, but appreciate your insights and analysis the entire time, and enjoy the rest of the holiday weekend, and we'll have the Saturday simulcast, of course, after the Frigid Bucket game, so we'll see you in Bloomington.
Yeah, no doubt. Thanks. Well, if we can dust the ice off of Tom's computer after that one, we'll get into that. So.
People watching that are the true fans, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Tom will be in the heated press box, so I don't want to hear it.
That's true.
I'm the one that's going to be down on the sidelines.
I feel bad for you.
My cappuccino and my macchiato, Eric. You'll be down there freezing.
We'll be listening. Macchiatos.
We'll be listening to you, to your teeth chatter, and we'll be doing the post-game radio show, call-in show. That ought to be a doozy as well. So it'll be a great night for Purdue fans. So that's for sure.
Sounds good, guys. We'll see you then.
Take care, fellas.
Thanks.
That's Alan Karpik and Tom Dienhart, and we appreciate them, of course, helping us out on the show all week long, all season long, I should say. And that's our show for Golden Black Radio, a Friday edition. Let's give a final thank you to our sponsors, Purdue Federal Credit Union, the official credit card for Purdue fans, East End Grill and Ripple and Company, two distinctive bistros across the street from one another on the far end of Main Street in Lafayette. The Whitaker Inn, this Midwestern oasis, perfect for a relaxing staycation or a weekend getaway. Escape from the ordinary at the Whitaker Inn. The Sand Valley Resort, celebrate all the wilderness provides this fall and winter at Sand Valley. You can start planning your winter getaway by visiting sandvalleypursuits.com. and the Purdue Institute for Cancer Research. The Purdue Institute for Cancer Research has a history of innovation and one goal for the future: defeat cancer. Join the fight and donate to the Purdue Institute for Cancer Research today. And of course, if you're not already, don't forget to become a subscriber right here at goldandblack.com. As I mentioned, the Saturday simulcast be a late night one, right after the first ever night game between Indiana and Purdue in the Old Oak and Bucket rivalry. Alan and the crew will have that coming for you. Also, of course, you know, next week and into the coming weeks, we've got National Signing Day. We've got the transfer portal. We've got a lot of football items still to be determined, to tackle, no pun intended. So there will be plenty of football discussion here on Golden Black Radio moving forward. But of course, we'll shift back to basketball and get a recap from Brian Newbert of their trip to San Diego and today's game against Ole Miss. Obviously, they've already got the win in their back pocket against NC State. And moving forward into the opening of Big Ten play in early December, this is the new schedule, right? Year three or four of this, where they start playing some December conference games. So we'll get into all of that coming up on next week's show here at Gold and Black Radio. But thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the Bucket game tomorrow and enjoy the rest of your Thanksgiving holiday weekend. I'm Derek Schultz. We'll see you next time right here on Golden Black Radio.
This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best in class equipment we've always had, with most clubs open 24 hours so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See home club for details.